From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the first day of March 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Nick Paulson, agricultural economist, member of the FarmDoc team, will be here to discuss decisions that farmers can now make with all the data related to crop insurance and Arkin PLC. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions. He'll, by the way, be at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House on Tuesday of next week. If you've not seen him in person, you'll want to be there too. You can sign up for that at willag.org. The cost is just $40. Don't wait. Registration will close soon. The All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House on Tuesday, March the 5th. For the rest of our program today, if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear Commodity Week with Wayne Nelson and Dave Chatterton. Otherwise, it's already up on our website at, again, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.12 1/4, 3.5 lower. The May down 4 3/4 at $4.24 3/4. In December, new crop at $4.59 1/4 down 4 cents. March soybeans, a better day there, up 14 3/4 at $11.43. May 11.51 1/4 up 10.5. And November soybeans, 11.39 3/4 up 6.5 cents on the afternoon. The soybean meal of 70 cents higher. The bean oil down 4 cents. Wheat futures were off 17.5, settled at $5.60 for the hard red in the March, and the soft red, down 22 3/4 at $5.80. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $188.45, up $3.10. Feeders $4.27.5 higher, and the lean hogs finished up $1.45 at $88.07.5. Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us for a Friday. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Let's get right to this. I saw that beans had a rally on Friday. What happened? Why did that take place?
Yeah, they really bucked the weekly trend, and I really do think it has a lot to do with the fact that we changed the calendar. It seemed to me, Todd, while we were computing the base price for the crop insurance for row crops, the trade late in the month of February kind of caught wind of the idea that they were probably out of place in terms of trying to hold on to corn acres and put in too many bean acres. And I think they reversed thrusters. The bean corn ratio at one point did dip below 2.5 for several days as a result of that. But I think since we struck the March 1st calendar date, short covering came in as a result of that. And I think, honestly, it's going to be really interesting to see whether it can go any more than what it did on Friday, because we had another big delivery for day two on soybeans of 502 contracts. And then we had the delay by the Biden administration on the sustainable aviation fuel update and how they're going to manage that. And they're saying it's going to come in weeks. So not unlike what happened with ethanol a week ago. So there's a couple big things out there that would suggest that the beans are still going to be difficult to be able to go it on their own, especially with the tragedy that happened on a daily basis in the wheat complex, led again by the European futures.
Tell me more about that, please.
Well, the European futures have not played ball with the Chicago or hard red wheat futures in that they have continued to go lower thanks to the Black Sea, but especially thanks to Romania. I'm hearing that there's some forced farmer selling going on there of 23 crop, not unlike what we just went through in corn here in our country. Add to that, Russia's expected to cut their export duty on wheat by 6% next week. And that gives you the idea that this is why we almost hit a fresh four-year low in European futures to try and keep pace with the Romanian price. And that was the problem all week long, whereas the European corn really felt support from the U.S. corn. So that's kind of how we're limping going into next week's trade from a technical perspective, and soft red wheat especially.
I made note that Sinograin, and I think this had an impact in the corn market earlier in the week, has been told, go ahead and put more in storage corn, that is, to try to raise the internal price of corn for China to give the economy some lift in the rural areas. Could also cause an import of corn, I suppose. That was what the news was. Do you think that will play out?
I do. I don't think we're done with the South American weather yet because of the missed rains in center west Brazil. Looking at some of the root zone soil moisture maps in Mato Grosso and even Mato Grosso do Sul, it seems to me that we are not out of the woods with that crop just now getting planted as far as the Safrinha corn, Todd. So top three contenders next week for me are going to be the U.S. dollar ruble because of the European wheat. The Chinese start their National People's Congress on Tuesday, which should be Monday night for us, and then South American weather, center west Brazil, and the Pampas of Argentina for soybeans especially.
What are conditions like today in your part of the world there in the eastern part of Kansas?
It's tough to say. I think we had some damage because we were so far advanced, but I really didn't hear much from clients about how bad it was, you know, like we normally do. And we see a temperature swing from 75 degrees down to 11 degrees in about 7.5-8 hours. So I think that's a yet to be determined. I'll be eager to see what Kansas State puts out on what the wheat crop looks like and when we get these conditions rolling again.
Finally, anything in the outside markets we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, the big thing in the cattle market is another fresh record high. We ran on all eights there in the cattle market. We had the cash trade come in on Thursday, wildfires ravaging the poor people in cattle country in Texas. Hogs hit new daily highs thanks to the bellies and the hams, and then we had another fresh all-time high in the S&P 500. I'm going to keep my eye on that S&P 500, though. Could be a pullback lurching in March, I suspect.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. With the close of the month of February, farmers, landowners, and others have about 15 days to make a couple of decisions, one of them related to crop insurance for corn and soybeans, the other, of course, related to the safety net programs operated by the United States government or the ARC and PLC programs. Nick Paulson is here to discuss some of the particulars and then, of course, to point you back to the FarmDoc site, farmdoc.illinois.edu, where the tools for these decisions can be found. That's different than FarmDoc Daily, but if you get there, you can find the links to both of them. Thank you, Nick, for being here. Let's start with what February looked like. There are two important functions. The last five trading days are the volatility that sets part of the premium price, and the other is what the actual price or average across the whole month of February for the November soybean contract and the December corn contract might have been. Where did those two numbers finish up?
Yeah, so throughout February, we had the harvest contracts is how we refer to those. So the December 24 contract for corn and the November 24 contract for beans. The way that the projected price for crop insurance policies is set is they take the average of the settlement prices on those contracts throughout the month of February. We ended up at 466 for corn, and we ended up, I believe, at 1155 for soybeans. Those are significantly lower than what they were the last couple years. Last year, we were at 591 for corn, so that's a decline of just over 20% on the projected price for corn. And last year on beans, we were at 1376, so I think that's a 16% decline in the bean projected price. There's kind of a good news, bad news story that goes along with that. So on the one hand, we'll have lower premium costs. If you're buying the same policy, same coverage level as last year, you're going to pay less for it. But the bad news side of that is the guarantee that you'll get from that, whether it's a yield protection policy and the number of bushels you're guaranteeing, or it's a revenue policy, the revenue per acre you're guaranteeing is also going to be proportionally lower because of those lower prices.
The volatility factor is developed during the last 5 days. Do you have an idea of how that compared to previous years and what those numbers were this year?
Yeah, so for corn, we ended up at 19%, 0.19 volatility factor compared to 0.18 last year. So that'll have kind of the opposite effect that lower price did. But that, you know, so our premiums won't be 21% lower on corn. They'll be something a little bit less than that lower, because that volatility factor kind of works in the other way. There's actually more moving parts than that too. Crop insurance rating is kind of complicated. There's other little changes that happen year to year. But in general, You know, you should see premiums, you know, approaching that 20% lower than the previous year. Soybeans, similar story. The volatility factor went from 0.13 last year to 0.15 this year. So again, that has kind of the opposite effect on premiums. But again, the combined effects of the lower price and the higher volatility should still result in lower premiums than we had last year.
When you wrote the article called First Look at Crop Insurance, you were thinking that farmers, given what you thought prices would be, should probably continue to buy at least what they had in the past, or maybe buy up in the state. Does that matter whether you're in the southern areas or the northern areas and high and low productivity areas, and did it change over the month?
Yeah, I think kind of that advice in that first look earlier in February, I think would pretty much hold. You know, the other challenge we're dealing with here is we've got high production costs based off of the higher price, higher income years we've gone through recently. But now we've got the lower market prices, which is those lower projected prices are a direct result of that. So we do have much tighter margins and some potential negative returns, particularly on rented farmland heading into 2024. And so kind of minimizing costs, looking for ways to cut costs on a per acre basis is going to be a strategy to look at. But I don't think crop insurance is necessarily the place to do that. So, you know, again, those insurance guarantees for whatever the policy was you bought last year are going to be lower because of that lower price. And so, you know, you could think of taking some of those quote unquote savings from the lower premiums and maybe buying up to higher coverage levels. The challenge with that in central and northern Illinois in particular is that farmers already typically buy very high coverage levels, either at the 80 or 85%. So they can't really move much higher on their individual plans. Southern Illinois, there's a little bit more room in a lot of cases to do that because farmers in that part of the state don't buy as high of individual coverage, but their premiums are also more expensive. As you mentioned, it is a lower productivity area of the state, and it also tends to be a higher risk area, which makes their insurance policies more expensive. So one strategy we're looking at, if you don't have that ability to buy up additional individual coverage, or it's just very expensive to do so, we're just reminding people that there are those supplemental area plans, SCO and ECO, that could be a way to increase the amount of revenue or the amount of yield you're guaranteeing per acre, combine that with your individual plan. And you should be able to do that at a lower cost than increasing that individual coverage level just because those county products are cheaper. You know, the things you got to watch out for there is one, SCO eligibility is tied to your farm program decision. So you got to be in the PLC program if you want to insure those acres with SCO. And, you know, there's basis risk with those programs. So you may have a loss at the farm level that doesn't translate to county level losses and vice versa. So those products aren't going to cover you as directly as that underlying individual plan is going to.
Just for clarification point, are you suggesting, and I think you are, that you might look at SCO and ECO, particularly for corn, maybe not for soybeans in the SCO part because of the Arc County decision. You can talk about that in a second. But at the 80 and 85%, or do you drop back the base rate on crop insurance and then cover with SCO and ECO because it's cheaper?
So all those strategies are on the table. Again, I think we kind of hesitate to be too strong in suggesting to back off of what you would typically buy at the individual level and replacing that with that area supplemental coverage. You probably could save some premium dollars, but again, you want to make sure you really understand and think hard about that trade-off between the farm level and the county level coverage and sort of that additional basis risk you take on when you do that. Then again, if you look at your history and you typically kind of tend to follow your county in terms of yields, price side is the same, regardless of the policy you're talking about. So it's really the yields. If you typically follow your county and those county products provide pretty decent coverage, backing off on that individual to save those dollars, replacing it with the county level could be a strategy, but also just adding the supplemental on top of the individual coverage you typically buy would also be a way to think about increasing the amount of revenue or the amount of yield that you're guaranteeing per acre, just given the fact that we've got lower guarantees this year, but still very high costs.
And just one other reminder in the process that if you're using this thinking, especially if it's very tight margins in the fall, while crop insurance pays out in the fall, ECO, SEO don't pay out until yield numbers come out in the month of February, so the next spring with the payments there. So can't count on that as a cash flow situation in the fall. One last thing. The Arc County PLC decision, corn and soybeans, still leaning Arc County for both in general?
Yeah, so we just recently got our online kind of web-based calculator that we partner with the National Center for Supercomputing Applications on campus to put out. That was originally kind of a deal to cover the 18 farm bill, which technically ended last year, but was extended for a year. So we work with them and got a year for free, so to speak, out of the calculator for everybody. And that'll give you payment estimates, likelihoods, probabilities, chances of payments, as well as expected payment levels. And what we're seeing out of that is, in just a straight up comparison between PLC and Arc County, for corn and wheat, we're seeing a higher chance of payments from Arc County. And related to that, a higher expected payment level coming from those programs as well. We're not talking about huge differences. We're talking about maybe a 1 in 3 chance of a PLC payment being triggered. Again, we're kind of consistent across corn and wheat. And then it varies more across counties for Arc County, because you get the county yield that factors in and the revenue. But somewhere in that 40 to 50% range, 50 would be, very much on the high side. More in the low to mid 40% range in terms of a chance of triggering Arc County this year. And then, slightly higher average payment levels because of that higher chance. Soybeans are a little bit different. It's really a toss-up, and it's really a toss-up between two very low likelihoods of either program triggering. So we're looking at a 10% or even a little bit less chance of payments from either program for soybeans. And that's just a function of the fact that even though we've got lower prices, even that lower expectation for the 2024 soybean price, the marketing year average that impacts those programs, it's still above the kind of that reference price for PLC. And then the price levels where we'd be likely to see Arc County payments, there's just still kind of a bigger gap there on soybeans. And so more of a toss-up on soybeans, and again, a toss-up between two options that are probably both equally not super likely at this point.
Thanks much.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Nick Paulson. He's an agricultural economist, a member of the FarmDoc team. If you'd like to find those calculators from the team, you can do that easily enough at farmdoc.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us. Hey, it's cooler, but is winter? Was Punxsutawney Phil correct this year?
I'm going to give him some credit this year. Usually I like to throw him under the bus, but this year we'll kind of give him a nod. So winter is done technically with respect to meteorological winter, which we generally call from December 1 to March 1st. And although astronomical winter doesn't end until we get to the equinox, which is still ahead of us by a couple of weeks, here we are. So what did winter do? Well, winter was very mild, right? We know that. It was cold once, to be honest with you. There was about a 9-day stretch back in mid-January where it got really, really cold. We did not get any snow out of that, though, remember? And we did get decent moisture return, but here's the big idea. Winter left us with some deficits that need filled in. We are still feeling last fall's drought in our subsurface soil moisture across parts of the state, and we need to fill that in, not just here, but it's the whole Mississippi, Ohio, and Missouri Valley. The Western Plains, have been burning lately. There's been several massive wildfires. There's already been 1 million acres burned in Texas. Just remember something, all of last year, we only had 2.6 million acres burned. So this is already starting to just give us a lot of vibes of, are we really building in some sort of major drought risk? Now, we have spring ahead of us, and spring is our recovery time. And yes, the pattern is quite active right now. So our temperatures are going to start to crank again. We're going to get back into very warm conditions quite soon. And I have two more storm systems lined up, one coming like the 5th, 6th, and 7th across the country, a little bit slower mover. And then we've got one coming after that, toward the middle of the month. And when I say slower moving, I'm referring to the speed at which the system crosses the United States, because that one that came through us earlier this week was on steroids. It ripped off all that severe weather north. We had more severe storms to the south. And we had, I think in total, I'll have to go back and look up the number, but I think there were 11 tornadoes reported that day across the northern tier of Illinois. So we need to get the system to slow down. You say, why? Well, when it slows down, we can keep the rain around longer and work against the soil moisture deficits. So long story short, if there is a plus to the warm conditions we had this winter, that means that we're not trying to thaw soil now to get water to soak in. Any spring rains is going to go a long way to help us out before we get into the fields.
All right. So I know you've talked a little bit about it, but what about the month of March? What's this transition look like?
Yeah. So we do think that the beginning of March sends us a system every week, which is good. We'd like to see that. Once we get past the middle of March, the big question is going to be, can we hang on to where the jet stream pattern is coming from right now in the Pacific? And what I'm watching is Hawaii. So you go north of Hawaii right now, there's a massive ridge. So think about that. If there's a ridge in Hawaii, there's a trough that comes in the west. The troughs in the west initiate storms for us. We keep that ridge over Hawaii, we're in really good shape for keeping an active remainder of March, which means more warm days than cold days. So there's always worry, right? You have this mild finish to winter, mild start to spring. Do we end up getting just hammered with cold air at some point? I don't have evidence of it happening just yet, but I know it's going to be a worry for a lot of folks. So what do we have for March? I think we're going to see in total near normal to above normal precipitation. I think there is an elevated severe weather threat in the month of March for much of the Midwest, Mid-South, and Southeast. And I also think that March is going to be relatively windy as well. So March, it's going to be the transition month to get us toward April in a planting time period. And I just want to remind everybody of something, okay? When it gets this warm, please remember that while we're out doing field work, our last frosts are typically mid to late April, so we just have to be careful of what that could mean.
And farmers will be thinking, because it's dry in some places, about previous years, 1988, probably the one that's in back of the mind is 2012, for lots of reasons for them. Have they been asking you about it?
Nonstop, Todd. So, and if I could just be frank with you here, what is interesting is the tone at which people are asking me about 2012. I actually believe that there are a lot of growers that want it. They want the 2012 to come in and reset global supply. And so there is some folks saying, if 2012 happens, I'm a disaster. And there are some people saying, if 2012 happens, we can finally make a recovery after what we've experienced the last 6 months in the prices. So it's been a weird ask. I have people that I think want it. Now, is it going to happen? Yeah, was 2012 really mild in March, really mild in February? Yes. In fact, it was the warmest March we have on record right now, 2012 was. So when I just told you that it's going to be mild for March and we have some soil moisture problems, people are saying, this is it. We're going back. Now, what happened in 2012? Right now in 2012, the water temperatures from Japan to Alaska to California and then back out. So you imagine, just draw a big reverse-shaped C, like the letter C across the ocean, all along the coasts, there was really cold air, or really cold water, excuse me. That is always the precursor to drought. So do we have it this year? The answer is no. Do we have the same kind of El Nino situation in 12 as we do this year? No. Did we have massive drought that was surviving winter in Texas that was already in Arkansas and Oklahoma and Missouri at this point? No. We're missing some key components to it. Now you got to remember, we can get dry a whole bunch of different ways around here. It doesn't just take the 2012 recipe to do it, but I can't use 2012 as a strong analog for this upcoming year just yet. So what do I know right now? What I know is the ocean temperatures are warm. The models are wet for us. And if you said, Eric, if you had to pin down today where you think the greatest drought risk is, I would tell you that it is probably somewhere from the southeast to the mid-south, to the high plains of Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado. That's where I'm most worried about so far. That gives us ridge riders, by the way. So there you go, Todd. That's what I know today at the very beginning of meteorological spring in terms of what's going on in North America.
Not good enough, dude. We need something to happen in Brazil in that case.
Well, there might be a story there, right? I mean, this has been we've had this dialogue, you and I, about what we think could be happening in Brazil because of that El Nino fading. So new model runs today suggest that over the next probably 10 to 15 days, the early March rains, which are needed for that safrinha crop, which is almost done getting planted, they've got to have good rains for germination to get the crop started. Well, they're drier than normal. They're warmer than normal. And then the new model runs just came out all the way through mid-April, suggesting that they miss out on about half their rainfall. So could that start to eat away at the total production of safrinha corn? Possibly. It would really be helpful if we'd get a report out saying that the acreage that was planted is smaller than normal. You know, but we need a combination of events to turn the whole market around in a direction where it's kind of doing a sustained climb. And I'll tell you this, if there is a problem with Brazil's safrinha crop, we usually don't know about it until we get into May and June when the numbers start coming in and they're disappointing. And sometimes that's timed right with our best spring rallies. So I would just say I'm optimistic, but I'm also a glass half full kind of guy. So I would tell you that all in the same breath so that you know when I kind of give those longer range projections, I want you to know what I'm thinking.
Hey, we'll see you on Tuesday at the Beef House.
Yes, I'm super excited. I got a fun story to share with everybody to set us all up, and it'll be about one of the books you and I like to discuss, so it'll be kind of fun.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait. Yeah. I cannot wait. That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and will join us at the Beef House on Tuesday next week. You can, too. All the details are online, willag.org. The cost is $40. That includes the Beef House meal and a beginning story by Eric Snodgrass. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.